episode 490 of Global From Anywhere podcast, research and development, product innovation, and intellectual property.
Welcome to Global From Anywhere podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business is broken down into straight up actionable advice.
Paul is a product developer and founder focused on research and development and intellectual property strategy for product-based businesses. He is currently expanding his work in product development and IP services through Xcelovation.
In his own journey, he has a total of 4 patents, recently secured a patent, and is now actively working through enforcement and licensing discussions. Having managed the entire process independently from ideation through to legal protection and commercialization.
His experience sits at the intersection of product creation, intellectual property, and real-world enforcement, offering a practical view into how ideas move from R&D into protected, monetizable assets. Let's dive in. Hey, entrepreneurs, if you're serious about scaling your cross-border business in 2026, don't miss the Cross-Border Summit happening November 3rd to 5th in Chiang Mai, Thailand. Network with speakers and fellow advanced sellers who are already navigating AI tools, tariff strategies, and new market expansion. Early bird tickets available at 2026.crossbordersummit.com. Paul is a business owner and also an IP expert from this. I feel like it's also from your own experiences. So you are Paul Basu, a product developer and founder of research and development and intellectual property strategy for product-based businesses. You're expanding your work in product development and IP services through Xcelovation. And you have your own journey, which I love. You've done it yourself with 4 patents secured and actively working them through enforcement and licensing discussions. So you've managed the process yourself from ideation all the way through legal protection and commercialization. I think you have quite a great experience from doing it yourself to the IP side, to real world enforcement and practical views. So thanks for coming on the show with us today, Paul. How'd I do? How is
that? Thanks for having me. Yeah, really helpful. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. I really appreciate you having me on here.
No, it's great. We were chatting, we were preparing for the show, and I think you've been on another show, but not many. I love to kind of find guests like you that have a lot of, it's part of even what we do here is on the ground, people really practicing what they preach and doing it and sharing the real world, but maybe a little bit more personal before we dive into the meat. How about you? A little bit of your background. You're in Vietnam, as I kind of alluded to.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Maybe a little bit about yourself. And
actually, baseball my entire life, college baseball.
Wow.
I went over to Europe and Dominican to play over there after college.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. After that, I finished up. I went into personal training, strength and conditioning, right? Yeah, I worked with Team Canada, then kind of transitioned over to my own personal training, my own business. I'd travel around training clients, players, teams, and I just used really, I don't want to say bad equipment, but outdated equipment.
Yeah.
Different sorts of sandbags and sleds and that's not why I came up with my sandbag idea.
Okay.
I just wanted to, save myself some time and energy going back and forth from the car. And that's how everything kind of clicked in. I need something to make my life a little easier.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah, and that's how everything just clicked in together. I travel with it now. Back then, the prototypes... they would just wear and tear. I slowly built it up and then just learning by my own mistakes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's been a journey. I started this in 2018.
Okay, that's helpful.
Yeah, 2018 was the first prototype, and then I launched on Kickstarter 2020.
Right, COVID, man.
Yeah, I know. I didn't reach my goal because I had this marketing agency. They promised if I gave them $15K, they ghosted me within 2 months before launch.
What?
Yeah. So I was under. I put down my deposit for production, given the fact that, hey, like they said that, yeah, we're going to reach X amount. So you'll be okay. Just place your order for production. I didn't reach it. And I was just like, damn, what do I do now? But I just pivoted around it, right? Those are like the bits and pieces around there.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know who these 15K is decent money. I think there's a lot of listeners probably that would maybe do it. It's good, do good work and probably charge less. Unfortunately, some of these agencies are just really good at the sales, onboarding, client acquisition, but they're not good on the delivery. It seems
it wasn't only me. They screwed over a lot of companies. They got sued. They went bankrupt. Yeah, I know, man. They had fake names and everything like that. They're all based in California too, so it's really hard to believe, right?
Yeah. Let's stay positive, but of course, I guess what's the way to prevent that? You think for some, I guess due diligence.
That's really hard. Given the fact that they had backings, they had endorsements by celebrities, and then the celebrities, and they got sued. It was a mess, man. That was a mess. But it's really hard to trust marketing agencies. I shouldn't say that. No, I regret saying that.
Yeah, there are good ones, but...
There are good ones.
But good we ones. We talk about it here in our team. We say, oh, we should get more client in project. We sometimes do a client. They sound like our main thing, but we're like, it's a whole business, just the client acquisition, client management. You know what I mean? Not actually doing the work. I feel like, especially now, I think it's more than half the work is the acquisition and the management of a client, right?
Exactly.
So you gotta, the cost is not doing the work. The cost is like getting them and managing them. Like, but this is interesting. So Orioles baseball and scratching your own itch, making a product, getting burned with, I feel like this is just part of the process to a lot of us. I guess one thing to say is you didn't give up. Maybe a lot of people might have just said, oh, I got screwed, I lost this money, F this, I'm out. But you persisted, you kept going, and now four of your own patents.
Yeah,
four. With product in this same, in your kind of like personal health training kind of category.
Yeah, all in the same industry.
Okay.
Yeah, I like to stick to my niche.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm more passionate about it. I have more knowledge behind it.
Of course.
Yeah, I and agree. Then just keep on innovating from there.
Okay. So let's jump into some of these outlines. And then I guess there's a disclaimer you want. It's fair. It's obviously your experiences and you've been learning this as an inventor. But why do you think most products fail at this early stage? What was the separation you think of those that succeed from fail?
Yeah, no. So first, I'm not a patent attorney. I'm just a sole inventor and pro se applicant. I should not be liable for any... I'm actually reading this too. I should not be liable for anything I would say or give advice. So in other words, I'm not a patent attorney.
Yeah, don't like do your own diligence.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you would
this
know.
This educational purposes only is another good one, right? Like
exactly. My own personal experience. I'm just trying to share.
Yeah.
And how I overcame it and what worked and what didn't work.
Okay. So let's get into it. They got me intrigued here. So what are some of the things that you think separates the winners from the, I don't want to say losers, but the ones that don't make it or don't hit the numbers?
Yeah, no, you really have to see what's in demand and what's going to be in demand compared to saying that I want to invent this idea. It's super cool. I think it's going to be useful and novel meaning like innovated, but you really have to see if there's a market for that, and you have to solve problems. Like anyone can invent something, but you have to solve a problem.
I think design patent, utility patent,
all utility. All utility for me, it's all utility,
because that's the harder one, right? It's more design is a little bit weaker, I think, because a lot of Amazon sellers get design patents.
That is very true. Lawyers really push Amazon clients for design patents because it's really easy to enforce. And same with Amazon. You just have to submit your patent and the ASIN. They just do a quick comparison and they'll tell you almost within weeks compared to if it's a utility, it's different. Utility, which is what I have, it's basically the function of it and how it works and all the components and the relationships between them. So for example, my handle on this sandbag is positioned on the top surface and the side surface compared to a design pattern where you're just looking at it and it's one handle here, one handle there. So if you want to get around a design pattern for a sandbag, you could just switch the position of the handle.
Yeah.
And that's a real easy design around compared to utility. You can, it really depends how you write it, right? For example, at least one handle position on a surface of the training bag.
Got it.
Yeah, so that's basically covering one handle on the entire bag. And if you have two handles in the bag, then you're infringing on mine. And that's just a short summary.
The part that really stuck out to me, unless I misunderstood it, but you said design patent is easier to enforce on Amazon. And of course, I still think a lot of us are Amazon sellers, at least people I know that listen here. A lot of us are trying to get off of Amazon or at least diversify, but still I think majority are still on Amazon, at least my assumption. But the idea here is you're saying I should get a design. No, you're not saying that. You're saying design patents easier to enforce on Amazon because it's a design so that Amazon can just look at it and then look at the Amazon listing. But I think a utility patent's harder and more valuable, like you said, but you're saying it's harder to enforce. Am I saying it correctly? Harder to.
Yeah. Like it's harder to enforce on Amazon. Enforced,
right. That's the right word. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is interesting. It's kind of like counterintuitive. Doesn't it seem like to you?
It is. Yeah, I know. But it's more technical, right? And Amazon, now they have this program. It's called Apex. Oh, you heard
a little bit, but I'd like to hear more, especially for listeners.
Yeah. So let's say that I have an infringer. I'll send a complaint saying that this ASIN is infringing on my patent. They would notify the seller. And he would come back and say that, no, he's not. And then Amazon would say that, okay, to me, you can go through with this Apex program where they have a third party attorney that makes a call. So the thing is, I have to pay $4,000, and same with the seller. And
per complaint or per the program?
Per complaint. Per complaint.
For
one claim of one patent, not like the standard patent, they have 20 claims, but with Apex, you can only enforce one, and both parties have to pay $4,000. If one party backs out, then the other one wins. And let's say both of us, we pay the $4,000, the attorney finds out that they're not infringing on my patent, the seller gets back the $4,000 and I still get charged for it. And then he continues to sell compared to vice versa. If I win, I get my $4,000 back and their listing gets shut down. And it's really tough for them to sell other products on there moving forward.
Yeah, if I could be frank, I mentioned a little bit before recording. And actually, I feel like this is an interesting maybe chunk to discuss, but I hear the other side of the sellers that get the IP owners complaints, but they usually receive it and usually it's frozen before, even if they're right, they have to defend.
Oh, really?
At least the ones I've told been.
Maybe that's trademarks, because trademarks is a lot easier.
No, it's a patent. Again, that was like around COVID time. It's hard to know, and it's not firsthand information. But 4K. So then your understanding is they can continue to sell during that time. My belief is, at least what I've heard, is this: they cannot sell that listing, or that at least they can't take the money out of that listing. I think maybe it sells. Maybe I think what happens is it sells
but they can't get that. The money's locked.
Oh, that's perfect, because I'm going through that right now as we speak.
I think the Amazon might hold it, and then, of course, they love holding money anyway, and then they can give it to you if you win, but if you lose, you might have to give it to the other side or whatever reason it is, because I remember them. It's painful. I mean,
Apex, so this has been helpful. I feel like we're a little bit, but I think this is an interesting direction to go. Something. It's just a new thought for me, because I always thought utility was the goal, but
for Amazon, a design is a lot easier to enforce.
This is a kind of a new thought process for me.
Yeah, a lot of attorneys really push for design patents.
So, but you're also selling it, right? Or you're not selling it?
Right now, I'm not. With my training vest, I'm not at the moment. I made the first version back in 2021. I did the first patent in 2020. And yeah, wow, 6 years ago. I heard on this lawyer, he charged me $10,000. And this was when I was back in Canada. And I didn't have any idea. But then when I started to get a sense of what he was doing, it's like, why can't I do that? So then I started studying IP. I didn't go to school for it, but I bought a ton of books. I listened to a bunch of podcasts. And I was like, why can't I do it? And then it just started developing and just kept on learning. Kept on learning to see what worked for me, what didn't work for me. I made some really bad mistakes, but I made some really investable decisions, which is helping me enforce my patents as we speak. And I made those decisions back in 2022.
All right.
For an example, my first version of the vest, I was focusing on just weights. But then I knew down the road I wanted to tap into the hiking and outdoor market, because that field is just growing year by year. So I threw in that feature there. I had no plans of really doing it, of really pursuing that manufacturing method. But now that I put that in the application in the 2022, once that patent was issued, then I filed a continuation in 2024, in August 2024, and then October, November, December, sellers were just coming out with this vest, like left and center, right? So thankfully, I'm just thinking like ahead of time. So what I always say to myself whenever I'm drafting like my patents or like a client's is think like an infringer.
True.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I don't know. I'll take a little bit of the other side, and maybe do they think of these? Do they know it's a patent, do you think? Or do they just not know it is and then find out later when you message them? Or is there a way that
they'll find out later? You can go on googlepatents.com or USPTO, United States Patent and Trademark Office.gov, and you can just search up any keywords and it would come up from there. Like a vest with a hydration pack, but you would receive like over 100,000 patents and published patents, even the ones from like the 1940s.
Man, we've brought up a couple of times, but can ChatGPT or AI help us at all with that?
Yeah, they definitely can. Yeah, they definitely can. Sometimes it's not as accurate, but if you get the paid versions, yes. Like especially with Claude.
Yeah,
ChatGPT, I stayed away from that. I moved over to
a lot better. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe OpenClaw or whatever, but they definitely increased Codex. It's the technical one. I think they've really. You should have taken another look. It's gotten a lot better. But I think it's also. Yeah, I just second that. Like, pay for AI. I can't believe I talked to a lot of people that don't pay for AI. Man, it's like night and day, right? The quality of even if it's just a $20 a month plan, it's significantly different than the free. And there's still a lot of people still don't pay. I don't get it. If you're going to use this on your day to day, like it's a significant increased quality of output. Anyway, so then you're thinking of patents before you're, so are you making patents to make the product or you're making to license, right? Or
right now I'm making to license because I've been there, done that with product development, manufacturing, supply chain. Inventory, marketing, I'm just burnt out from that.
Yeah.
And I just want to go into the licensing route. And now, as you brought up at the beginning, I just started up a accelerated program called Accelevation, helping inventors make soft goods in Vietnam.
Oh, in Vietnam.
And
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
yeah,
Manufactured in Vietnam. Yeah.
manufacturing in Vietnam, yeah, it cuts down the R&D time, the research and development. I create a product within 3 weeks compared
Wow.
to back home when it would take me 6 to 8 months. So that's where I'm going, in that direction. More passive, right? More passive income. You can just wait every quarter to collect your royalties. But I do want to get back into manufacturing my own products again, given the fact that it is patented too. I have customers just always asking me, hey, when are you coming back? And what are you coming out with next? Because everything on my store, everything I create is all either innovated, patented, or patent pending. I feel like I should come out with something that's new and useful compared to getting a sandbag or a weighted vest from Alibaba, putting on my logo and selling on my website. That's anyone can do that. You want to be
Yeah.
different. You want to stand out.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm browsing your site again. It's okay. I know some people are, but I guess you're not. You're fine because it's all patented anyway. Because a lot of sellers are afraid. But how can, say, a seller likes your product, wants to sell it? Is there a process for that, or in general?
To
License?
license? Oh, yeah. You have to come up with all these terms and conditions at the beginning. It's a long negotiation with me and this Amazon seller. First, I start off at 8%, but for the product industry, it's usually 3 to 6. 6 is on the high end. But would you really negotiate it starting at 6? No. You want to start high, right? And then they came back at 3% net profit. Then I said, no, we can go 5 gross. They said, no, we can only go 4 gross. I said, no. And it's a lot of back and forth, but you want to put up an upfront fee slash signing bonus, because it really depends when your patent got issued. And now that my recent one got issued last month, I can't claim a ton of damages to my sales because it's just been like a month. So I said, okay, if you want to license it, we can agree on something, but you have to give me a signing bonus and an upfront fee of $5,000. And then you, but
Is that a
that's just the
deposit, or is
beginning.
that a fee, or is that a deposit?
No, that's just upfront.
Is that so? It's not like a credit to future royalties, it's just a
No,
fee.
just upfront. Yeah,
Oh,
just
okay.
fee. Yeah, I tell them that or I'll shut you down. And
Yeah.
the $5,000 is like nothing towards your inventories or sales and stuff like that,
True,
right?
true, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And they don't want to risk that. They don't want to put that in jeopardy because they invested so much in inventory. They have it sitting. I look at Helium 10 and they're making thing. They're making money, man. But their products are super, super cheap. And you can tell just by ordering it.
Yeah, interesting.
I can go on and on
I
with
think I want to go
that,
back a
but yeah.
little bit because I think even I'm not sure, and I'm always trying to think of the people tuning in. Claims. And in our notes, you're saying anyone can get a patent. What matters is how you write the claims. So I'm curious
Exactly.
about that. You kind of went through it a little bit, but maybe we just back up a little bit for myself and other, I believe others.
Yeah, no, so they want to be as broad as possible and not narrow. Before the beginning, I just said, okay, I'm going to have this. I'm going to cover all of this, right? Let's say for my bag, I want to cover the handles, where they are, the loops where you attach the D-rings to drag it, the backpack straps, and the inside surface. So I said, okay, I'm going to have like all of these on my patent. But then if an infringer comes in and then he just removes one, let's say that he removes the loops, then he's not infringing on my patent, because it's not broad enough. So you want to be as broad as possible. And that was an actual real example as well. But then I went over to my lawyer. I just said, hey, is this enforceable? And he said, no, just because of that one line, that one word, it's not enforceable. Just don't even put any time and effort or resources into that. So it really depends, like, how you claim the product itself. Patents, they can go for 100 pages, right? But it depends on the claims. And if you read the claims, no one's going to really understand what they mean. unless you studied law. It doesn't make sense in like any sort of like English grammar terms. Like for an example, at least one fastener, the at least one fastener position on a surface of the main body of the bag. Like you're looking at me like, what? Do you know what I mean? That's like really broad compared to something really narrow. So why I'm saying that is basically a fastener on a bag, if it's positioned on the side compared to on top, you would have to write it saying that a fastener is secured or positioned on a surface compared to a specific surface, which is, let's say, the top surface or side surface. That kind of makes sense or not
Yeah, it
really?
makes sense.
Yeah, and it's really technical how you write it. Really technical, but you really have to spend time and do research about it because you have to look at other products that are out there, other patents that are out there. It's called prior art.
Yeah, I've heard of this.
No, you're okay. Yeah, you have to do a prior art search, and there's thousands of applications and patents with your similar feature. And when the examiners, when they go through the product, so the examiner of the USPTO, the United States Patent and Trademark Office, when they examine your patent application for the first time, they just have to type in a few words. Let's say fastener on a vest. And they would come out with some a zipper on a jacket, a zipper on a t-shirt, just because like all these little keywords, right? But then when they narrow down, you're just like, this is really similar to mine. How do I get around it? And then that's when you go really narrow, and that's when you find out that you have a really weak patent because you didn't do a search at the beginning.
Yeah, man. We're kind of running out of time, and there's so much I want to. I
Yeah,
mean, I think
there is a lot to
maybe,
cover.
I think this is. I think maybe it starts to wrap up for now.
Yeah.
I think we can do more. I really appreciate being so open about numbers and
Yeah, you're welcome.
products. It's really helpful rather than a lot of times more generic. So the strategy is, but then I think one worry a lot of sellers have, even myself, is like, of course I want a patent, but it's gonna take a long time, and I want to sell stuff to make money now, right? I guess he's got to build up this longer term pipeline where you're like, I think you got to just ex put out a lot more time before launch, right? Because it's already a
Around
long.
18, yeah, exactly. Around 18 months, but there's ways you can get around it. You can fast track it. You just have to pay an extra fee. You could get a patent maybe within 6 months. It
And
really
then,
depends, yeah, how you write it, and you just have to pay accelerated examination fee, which is usually like $1,000 extra on top. Yeah, but yeah, it really depends how you write it. Anyone can get a patent. Anyone can. It just really depends how you write it. And you want a strong patent, so you want to go in full force the first time.
okay. I think we'll have a follow-up for sure.
Yeah,
We'll
for
get some
sure.
feedback from people on the show. I think a lot of us on the other side of the table, I don't want to call myself, I hate to even say Chinese seller, but sometimes, I don't know, I still feel like sometimes these sellers don't mean to, but I guess it's their fault for not maybe doing the research and finding if it was a patent or not. Let me find a good way to wrap up. Man, this is very valuable, and there's a lot here. But it's like you said, 18 months, 6 months, but then you still got to develop, manufacture, ship, product, inventory, selling. Do you know what's the strategy then? You mentioned earlier, right? If somebody's a seller now, let's just say me, right? You've seen my products. I have a couple different, but bar products is our main category. So should we try to, you still, we actually don't really sell any IP, to be honest. And so if we should continue to do the generic brand, but we still have the brand and we have distribution and other manufacturing advantages, whatever advantages. So should a seller start to also develop an IP portfolio in, I guess, in parallel, right? And then start to build up that, and then
Yeah, if you really feel like it's new and useful, let's say for one of your bar products, so I'm just saying a cup can turn into like a spoon. I'm just saying, like, theoretically.
Yeah, sure.
Then you're like, oh, that's pretty cool. It works. Let me go see if I can find a patent or any products like that. And you don't, then you would want to pursue it compared to if you just see like a shot glass, it has some like coating or just different size or whatever, then you don't even want to pursue it, right? So if you feel like you have any innovative features to it, do search, file a provisional patent application. It's $100, $200, depending what entity status you are. It keeps that held in for 12 months. Yeah, you're protected. You can put that patent pending status on your product, and you can go confident for 12 months, but then you have to convert it over to non-provisional. It gets a little technical over there, and that's how you can actually get a patent with a non-provisional and not a provisional. People get confused. Like, hey, I have a provisional patent, and it's not the case.
We got some of our live people. Rob is saying learning a lot here in the chat. If you have a question, we can squeeze it in real quick before we wrap up. But I've enjoyed this too. I'm taking notes myself. And but yeah, I think that is the future. I think that IP with AI and I hate to say Chinese sellers, but factories, let's just say, or just direct source. I think some of our remaining value in this ecosystem is intellectual property, right? I always say brand, right? But I think, of course, patents. But I think the hard part is, man, you got to enforce, right? You can't just say, I filed this if you don't enforce it, right? The one thing is, you got to do it, right? If you don't, what happens if you
What's the
don't
point
do
of
it?
it? Then what's the point of it? Applying for that patent, spending thousands of dollars, or in my situation, just spending hours, weeks, months creating that patent. And if you're not going to enforce it, then what's the point of having a
Well, it's of
patent?
course, one is what's the point, but two is don't you lose the actual patent or the enforceability if it's somewhat not been enforced and then later you try to enforce it? I don't know if I'm not trying to put you in the spot.
No,
I
not
feel like.
necessarily. If you notify the party, you only have 6 years to sue them in the court of law in the US. So, yeah, the time is ticking from now until 6 years. After that, they could just throw it out of court, basically, because it's been too long.
Okay, so we'll have some more follow-ups for people interested. Maybe just a shout out for what you do and how people can find you.
Yeah, for sure. So my products are on my website, 2xsr.com, and now I'm running a full-time consulting business with gearing towards soft goods like bags, vests, wallets, and stuff like that. Here in Vietnam, I have direct connections with factories. I could go to one tomorrow and say that, hey, we're going to start working on this. I can get a prototype done, a working prototype done within 3 weeks. So that's just a proof of concept of what I can do. So now I'm starting to get different potential sellers on Amazon wanting to come to me.
Yeah.
They want to, yeah, they just want to throw something on Amazon. So I say, hey, let's make this fast. And I cut down their time so they
Nice.
could, yeah, I know I got off topic there, but yeah, my other website, xlovation.com. And on LinkedIn, let me send you that link. A lot of people can reach me on LinkedIn. It's the best platform for
Okay.
professionalism, in other words. Yeah, just shoot me a message, shoot me an email.
Okay. Great.
Paulb@2xsr.com, and we can just kind of dig deeper into the conversation to see if something is really unique out there. I love talking to innovators about different ideas, and whenever they submit their idea, it's under NDA, so which
Okay.
is, yeah, it's all protected. Yeah, always love talking about R&D products. Shoot me a
Yeah.
message, see if we could work together.
Great. It's been fun, Paul. Thanks for
Yeah.
sharing, and we'll get these on the show notes as well for those on recording. I put a couple in the chat for those here. And
Okay,
thanks,
thank you.
everybody. Have a great day and have fun.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
Wow. I don't know about you, Mike, but my entire perspective on product development just got a massive reality check.
The biggest takeaway today is that a patent doesn't just protect your product, it only protects what you actually write down in the claims. One wrong word can cost you thousands.
Absolutely. And remember, don't ask your friends if your product is good. Take it to strangers, get that brutal feedback early, and build a defensible IP portfolio so you can transition from a stressed-out operator to a strategic asset owner.
Exactly. Now, a quick reminder, everything shared today is based on personal experience navigating the patent system as an inventor. Our guest is not a licensed patent attorney, and this is not formal legal advice. For legal counsel, always consult a licensed professional.
But if you want to avoid those expensive traps and get the real-world perspective most attorneys can't give you, check out the link to our guest's product accelerator in the show notes.
Hit subscribe, leave us a review, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
To get more info about running an international business, please visit our website at www.globalfromanywhere.com. That's www.globalfromanywhere.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.